Podcast Am I. As we come to the end of another year, it's time to reflect on some of the stories that have made the headlines over the last 12 months. I'm Sean Cowper, and over the next hour, we'll reflect on the events that have shaped island life in 2021 with Manx Radio's news review of the year. After a year of lockdown, social distancing, and Zoom quizzes, many of us will have entered January hoping a new year meant a return to the old normal. 2021 brought with it the arrival of the island's coronavirus vaccine rollout, but COVID wasn't done yet. 2020 had one final twist. With just 15 minutes of the year remaining, the Isle of Man government announced someone had tested positive for coronavirus after completing their quarantine and had entered the community.
Three new cases of COVID-19 have been detected in the Isle of Man. However, government stresses the risk to the Manx public remains low. The first case relates to an individual who travelled to the island with an exemption to work. The individual completed their 14-day period of self-isolation. However, after this period had ended, they went on to develop symptoms and contacted the COVID 111 service to arrange a test, self-isolating whilst awaiting the result, which came back positive.
1,400 people came forward for testing after a list of locations visited by a COVID-positive individual were released, including 1886 on Boxing Day. And on the 3rd of January, then-Chief Minister Howard Quayle gave his first COVID briefing of the year.
A risk in managing a response to any pandemic is that the public become complacent, or worse, indifferent. It is both encouraging and reassuring to see that our community remains vigilant and engaged in our efforts to keep the island COVID-free. Thank you. Before I go into detail, I want to make it clear that the two individuals who tested positive followed all the rules and have done all that has been asked of them. Upon arrival onto the island, they self-isolated as required and did so for the specified period. There has been a great deal of speculation over the past 2 days about these two cases, especially on social media. For these two individuals, I am sure it is not easy when the local community is discussing your actions and movements, understandably though it is. Both individuals are of course self-isolating again because of their positive test results, and I'm sure you will all join me in wishing them well and in thanking them for being responsible and following the rules.
It wasn't long until Mr. Quayle was back on our YouTube feeds, airwaves and social media timelines, as just a few days later, he made a more serious announcement.
The overarching and most important point is that we will need everyone to stay at home as much as possible. We will require the return to social distancing of 2 metres everywhere outside the home. You will not be able to gather with anyone who is not a member of your household. You will be able to go outside for exercise once a day. We will not limit how long for, but it can only be with people from your immediate household. We would ask you to do your best to avoid any crowded area, and you must wear a face covering. Weddings and collective worship will not be able to take place. Funerals may continue indoors and outdoors only with a maximum of 10 people with social distancing and the use of face coverings in place. We will be asking everyone who can work from home to do so by Thursday and ideally, if possible, before. There will be an orderly closure of schools and nurseries as we re-establish the hub system we had in place before to cater for children of essential workers and any vulnerable children.
The circuit breaker meant a return to staying at home, remote learning for school children, and for the first time on the island, face coverings were brought in. The setback didn't stop the island's vaccine programme getting underway, though, with healthcare worker Sandy Hannay, the first Manx resident to be jabbed at Nobles Hospital on the 4th of January. Then Health Minister David Ashford said it was a huge step in the fight against coronavirus.
It's an absolutely massive deal. It's finally some light at the end of the tunnel in relation to the pandemic. It's exceptionally important we get it rolled out as quickly as we possibly can. I'd like to start by thanking all of the teams involved. It's been a huge logistical challenge with this vaccine and the way that it has to be handled. But here we are on Vaccination Day.
It was the start of a programme that saw two vaccine hubs open, with one on, then closing, tens of thousands of locals vaccinated against the virus, and the birth of a social media phenomenon. After all, have you even been vaccinated if you haven't posted a picture of the little blue card on Instagram? January wasn't all COVID, though. It also saw two of our biggest towns bid farewell to the Isle of Man Bank. Despite protests, petitions and MHKs lobbying the company, Castletown and Peel saw their branches close their doors for the final time.
I use it every week,
yes. So how's this going to hit you?
I'm over 70. It's going to make a difference that I would have to go into Douglas all the time to pay money in. I don't like using technology, but we've been forced into doing it.
Just out of curiosity, do you have a car?
I don't drive, no.
So you'd have to go in by bus?
I have to go in by bus, yes. And I have arthritis, which makes it difficult to walk. It does make a difference. I have a friend who's over 90, and when the COVID finished, we didn't really want to go on public transport, but we were forced to go into Douglas and queue to pay in money because we take our weekly pensions in cash.
Do you use other things like the internet? It's what they're trying to encourage a person.
Yeah, I use online banking and stuff, yeah. But
Would you find you can switch quite easily to that, do you think?
Yeah, I use that quite frequently as well, yeah. Just keep on top of my savings, etc. But yeah, I don't usually go inside the bank.
So it's not a big blow to you?
No, not a big blow to me at all. No, I'll be all right.
You just discovered, yeah, that the bank is closing this week. How often do you use it?
I use it like every week normally, just so I can take money out.
So where will you go now?
Probably Barclays.
So it wouldn't worry you? It's a bank. It's a bank.
It's a bank. I'm a bit young at the minute, so it doesn't really worry me.
You'd be
much.
The sort of person we'd imagine to be using the internet.
Yeah,
we'd bang you on the internet.
Yeah,
do you do that?
Yeah, I do that. Yeah.
So can you switch entirely to the internet?
Not really. Because I still need to go to the bank so I can, like, go to the shops and that. So I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Lockdown 2 slightly overstayed its 21-day schedule, taking us into February. And the new month brought with it a new COVID concern, self-isolation, for steam packet staff. Concerned workers contacted Manx Radio about an apparent loophole that meant those working on board the ferry operators' vessels weren't isolating when off-duty, with the government and steam packet seemingly having interpreted the rules differently.
Government says it will meet with the steam packet this week to discuss whether COVID-19 regulations have been broken. Last week, it was confirmed an investigation had been launched after concerns that Manx-based crew weren't following self-isolation rules. Entry certificates issued to staff permit modified self-isolation, allowing the worker to travel between work and their home, but not go into the wider community.
The entry certificate that is issued to the steam packet is very clear. Got it here in front of me. The entry certificate is what should be being worked to.
You come off the boat, you go home, you isolate at home with your family, and then you go back to work. You can't go out and about, and that's clear. It's been clear from day one. I don't know if Dr. Hewitt wants to expand on that.
Yes, that is the case. And the direction notices and the protocols that go with them all support that.
Steam packet crews have not been isolating when they come off duty at all. This has never been the case.
Well, that's what we understood, and that is what I personally understood from them to be the case. And that is why I thought I sat in a meeting with them over a week ago discussing the introduction of a testing regime to enable us to mitigate it.
So the question is, how did you come out of a meeting on the 25th of January with the steam packet about relaxing restrictions without finding out that those very restrictions hadn't been in place?
Because we were talking on the basis of bringing in mitigations to enable them to relax, as in testing.
So nobody from the steam packet said those restrictions weren't in place in the first place?
No.
So just to be clear, are you saying the steam packet hadn't been truthful?
The steam packet did not mention that. Whether that is constituting deliberate lack of truthfulness or not, I wouldn't like to speculate.
The steam packet says there's been absolutely no lack of truthfulness in its approach to self-isolation requirements for Manx-based crew. It follows comments made by the Director of Public Health that the operator failed to disclose its protocols.
The Chief Minister says no further action will be taken after the confusion which emerged between government and the steam packet over isolation rules. His comments come after an investigation into why island-based crew weren't following the requirements. According to Howard Quayle, it showed there was a genuine misunderstanding over a direction notice, with Manx crew now subject to a new testing regime and updated rules.
It was an issue that came under further scrutiny as it emerged a number of crew members had tested positive. Away from the pandemic, February is of course budget time on the Isle of Man, and then Treasury Minister Alf Cannon delivered the budget speech for the fifth and final time. We heard COVID would cost the island around £200 million, with income tax and VAT receipts both down on forecasts. But it wasn't all doom and gloom. There were no tax rises. Extra funds were set aside to tackle climate change, while there were small increases for a number of welfare benefits. The budget wasn't without its critics, though, as Russian MHK Juan Waterson spoke out about the budget process, something he later attempted to change, while Garth MHK Daphne Kane raised concern about the lack of funding for heritage.
The Laxey wheel is not turning. It's broken. I believe it needs over £1 million to make it turn again. And that isn't even in the budget. And my information is a suggestion that perhaps the anti-heritage bias of the Treasury, is what I termed it, has prevented the Manx National Heritage from even applying to do that essential work.
That's just absolute nonsense, this morning. I mean, you know, we spent millions of pounds, and I'm sure you'll hear this afternoon, of the millions of pounds that have been invested in a heritage railway.
But after the freedom of February, March brought with it some ominous news.
The Director of Public Health says if the number of unexplained cases of coronavirus on the island increases, government's response will change accordingly. Ministers chose not to introduce restrictions after close contacts of two cases of unknown origin detected at the weekend all returned negative tests. Government had advised the public to stay at home and businesses to close on Saturday until those results came back.
Schools opened on the 1st of March as usual, but it was announced late that night that all students in Year 8 at St Ninian's and their families were having to self-isolate after positive test results among students. With cases of coronavirus spreading among the island's school children, thousands of residents found themselves in self-isolation, and it led to another lockdown.
We do not want to be in and out of lockdowns and circuit breaks. We have gone in hard and fast, and this has worked. We decided that we want to do the same again. We have therefore decided that we will be heading into a further circuit break from 1 minute past midnight tonight. So for clarity, the first minute of Wednesday, we will be putting in place and legalising for a set of clear measures. We will be doing this as we did the last time, for a period of 21 days.
The key to achieving that is for everybody to actually follow the guidance. And I know, you know, people get weary of this. I think we all understand that. But we do need to take it seriously and not to justify ourselves in breaking the restrictions, and keep hold of the fact that within a month or two we will be much clearer on the benefit of vaccination, and the vaccination programme will have been rolled out that much further. And so, you know, we have to hold to the thought that with luck, this may be the last time we need to go through this process. Although, of course, we can't guarantee that.
In the days that followed, hub schools for the children of key workers had to close due to staff shortages, and there were questions over the decision not to close the schools sooner.
I assume as a minister they always say their officers provide them with their information. So if the officers aren't providing them with the information to make decisions on school closures to ensure they are safe, and they did clearly state on the Sunday, when they opened the schools on the Monday, they said that they were perfectly safe. So if the minister's department hasn't got the data to feed up to them, who is feeding that data up?
So do you think that we could be in a situation now where if this information had been shared, fewer children could be infected?
I certainly think if they'd have known of the exact numbers in schools relative, we had cases in early February, I think it would have made that decision. Certainly from a leadership point of view in a school, they would have made that decision that it's in two or three schools, it's very highly contagious virus, and schools, I believe, would have been closed.
As with January's circuit breaker, it was hoped lockdown three would last for 21 days, but this time it took longer, with measures remaining in place until the 19th of April, as active cases took longer to fall.
April also saw the establishment of a new healthcare body for the Isle of Man, Manx Care. The board was set up to take politics out of the delivery of healthcare services. We also bid farewell to a friend of the Isle of Man in April, His Royal Highness the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh. Prince Philip visited the island on a number of occasions and locals shared their memories of meeting him.
I suppose one of the legacies for the Isle of Man and other places is the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme and the enthusiasm of young people here in the Isle of Man for getting the top award of that, the Gold Award. We see them here every year at Government House. Is very striking.
Prince Philip was a regular visitor to the island. I remember seeing him when I was a much younger man, when Her Majesty the Queen opened the QE2 High School way back in 1979. That was the visit where she and Prince Philip also joined us to celebrate the millennium of Timwald.
My own experience of meeting Prince Philip was at the ceremony for picking up my commission for the Armed Forces Parliamentary Scheme at the Speaker's apartment at the Palace of Westminster, and to say I was nervous is very much understating it, but it goes to show what a consummate professional he was in terms of putting people at ease, using his inimitable charm and fantastic sense of humour to take the edge off those nerves and to really show an interest in people. And it was something that I was very grateful for, the opportunity to meet him and have that brief experience with him.
I tried to talk to everyone, but obviously they had a time limit. So they went off to the next stand, but the Duke of Edinburgh obviously felt that it was unfair that he hadn't spoken to everybody on our stand and came back, which kind of upset the timetable a little bit, but it was lovely because he just wanted to come back and make sure that he'd spoken to all the young people.
In May, the island sat down to complete the census with the aim, among other things, to see what the population of the Isle of Man actually is. Instead of being sent a question paper, though, we were asked to go online and complete a form on the government's website. There were technical problems on the day, though, leaving some residents frustrated. I asked then Policy and Reform Minister Ray Harmer to explain what went wrong.
For me, probably the messaging wasn't strong enough because it wasn't clear to enough people that actually you didn't have to fill it in on the 30th. So I think that was a bit that you actually had more time and taking some of that stress out of the bottleneck. And obviously from the IT point of view, there's going to be what's called a full wash up of the issues and, you know, why did it struggle on the Sunday? Obviously it had a big volume on that Sunday, but it was the intention that it should cope with that volume. Obviously they were in on the Monday, got all of those issues sorted, and since then, you know, it's been working fine. But as I say, I think the messaging could have been clearer.
You're listening to Manx Radio's News Review of the Year with me, Sian Cowper, looking back at the biggest news stories that have impacted our lives on the island in the last 12 months. One of the largest events of the year made its debut in June as the island displayed its rainbow stripes for Isle of Pride. Parades, music, drag acts and performances of all kinds took place in the Villa Marina Gardens to celebrate all things LGBTQIA+.
It took a while to get here, but to Clare Barber and the Isle of Pride Committee, they've achieved what I would say is a very great success. It's packed, you know, and it's good for the Isle of Man.
It's huge. I was saying to my mother this morning that the other day when I saw a big rainbow banner on a Manx paper with a drag queen on it, younger me could never have dreamed of that moment, and then for it to be me that was that queen was just like, oh my god. And then to see all of this, it's such a change from what it was like for me growing up.
I didn't realise how much I missed Pride and how the Isle of Man was missing it itself, and it's quite overwhelming and exciting that the island gets to experience something so great, and it's part of a movement. Like, this is, it's a magical thing.
June also saw the publication of the annual Queen's Birthday Honours, with three Manx residents recognised. Chris Sharp, founder of the Manx Bird Atlas, received an MBE, while Marilyn Crallin received the British Empire Medal for her work with the Guild. But the top honour went to the then Chief Minister.
Howard Quayle is to receive a CBE for services to the people of the Isle of Man. He's been praised for his response to and handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as keeping close ties with and keeping the confidence of the UK government during Brexit negotiations.
It came just a couple of weeks after Mr Quayle confirmed he would not be standing in September's House of Keys general election, stepping away from Manx politics after 10 years representing the constituency of Middle. His decision also guaranteed a new leader would be at the political helm of the next administration, something that became the subject of much speculation as candidates continued to declare for September's vote. June was a busy month as it also saw the publication of a damning report into the management of the Department of Infrastructure. Management consultant Beamans found the government department had significant weaknesses in the way it's run. A review was commissioned after a number of projects like the Promenade Regeneration Scheme and the Liverpool Ferry Terminal were delayed and over budget. Then Infrastructure Minister Tim Baker said it showed his department needs more resources.
Beamans are a very experienced independent reviewer, and they've brought in their perspective from having done an extensive piece of work, and their conclusion is the department needs more resources, and I would certainly support that view. It's a challenging situation, and you need to get both the structure of the department right and the resource levels right, and Beamans say that there's room for improvement in both.
Why has it got to this point? Why did it need an external consultant? Is it not your job as minister to be asking for these things?
Good question. I think an external perspective is always helpful. I mean, clearly when I came in as minister, which was in June of last year, I brought a perspective and have instituted a number of changes since coming into the department, but certainly a external perspective from an organisation which is used to reviewing organisational structure and capacity and capability is an extremely helpful part of that process to drive the department forward.
Just before the midway point of the year came perhaps the biggest step in the island's relaxation of COVID restrictions.
Let me take you through what we are now proposing for Monday, the 28th of June. Anyone who has had two doses of COVID-19 vaccination administered within the British Isles and has had at least a two-week period following their second dose, allowing the vaccine to take full effect, will be able to travel to the Isle of Man unrestricted. We're calling this 2+2. This means no isolation and no testing on arrival.
For many, it was a huge step towards normality, but some felt the rules were still too restrictive. The decision to restrict the freedom to those who've had two COVID jabs led to questions from those who can't have the vaccine for medical reasons, as well as those who choose not to. It was the subject of one of this year's Tynwald Day petitions, with a large group of supporters gathering in St John's to see the paperwork handed over, led by Victoria Hodgson.
That clearly discriminates against the unvaccinated. We have to think of people who can't have the vaccine for medical reasons and those whose personal and religious views prevent them from having the vaccine. I have created a petition on change.org which has over 1,000 signatures, so I think there is a lot of support out there. People who had their two doses can still catch and transmit the virus, so the border entry policy is illogical and potentially ineffective.
A bumper crowd gathered at Tynwald Hill for the celebrations on the National Day. Last year's event was severely scaled back because of COVID restrictions, and this year had the added bonus of a royal visit.
All eyes on the leading vehicle, where we presume the Princess... Here she comes, she's dressed...
Her Royal Highness...
In light, a light colour. That's a mint colour, I would imagine, with a broad-brimmed hat on. And she's been now greeted by the two captains of the parish selected for this particular office, Mr Duggan of Lizaire and Mr Cayley of Braddon. And as you can hear, the band, the trumpeters in the background, are playing a fanfare to mark her arrival.
There was concern from residents in the west of the island as news emerged that the Corryn Memorial Home was on the verge of closure due to funding issues. It had previously been hoped residents in the long-time facility would have at least another 6 months in their home, while the Department of Health and Social Care worked with its owners to find a solution, But the site closed its doors for the final time in July, with residents relocated elsewhere in the island. Prior to the closure, Manx Radio's Ewan Gorn spoke to residents, their relatives and staff at the facility.
I hope that when you grow old, that you will find somewhere half as nice as this place for somebody to look after you, because they are absolutely fantastic.
What makes it so nice?
They're friendly, they're kind, nothing's too much trouble.
What would it mean to stay?
A lot.
You're 91 years old. Can't sleep at night now because of all this worry.
Yeah, she loves her home. It's been like a family to her during lockdown. Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to sort something out. And nobody seems to, apart from the staff here, are trying really hard to sort things. We don't seem to be moving forward.
We need to try and get the trustees and the Board of Governors on board in keeping or be willing to keep the home open past the 31st of July, and then if they agree to do that, then like David Ashford said, they can explore other options long term and short term and what they can do to help. We've been told that from the 31st of July they'll be financially not viable to keep the home open anymore, but obviously they've not declared their finances to anyone yet, so no one can really say for sure.
At the heart of this is 21 residents who exactly. And families who don't want to move. What's the feeling been like? How has this impacted people?
Well, as if their mental health wasn't at a low after four lockdowns, it is now. They're crying every single day. The staff are obviously doing their job to support the residents, but there's only so much we can do. You know, they're crying, they're depressed, they're saying that they'd rather be dead than move from the Corran home, which speaks volumes for itself. So with the support of the staff and their families, we're just trying to assure them as much as we can that we're doing everything that we can to prevent the home
June's
from closing.
Border changes meant there was an increase in the number of coronavirus cases on the island. While government always admitted this change would mean more cases in the community, it soon saw thousands of local residents stuck in self-isolation after being identified as close contacts of someone who has the virus. A number of local businesses started to struggle with staff stuck at home due to the close contacts rule, so action was taken with the introduction of lateral flow tests for the general public. It meant those who may have come into contact with someone who has COVID no longer had to self-isolate, but could instead take a self-administered test for 7 days while continuing to go about their business, another step towards living with COVID. The increase in COVID cases on the island had an impact on the local authority elections, with hundreds of COVID-positive voters unable to go to the polls. In many areas, though, no one went to the polls at all, as several boards didn't have enough candidates come forward to require a public vote. But with self-isolation proving an issue, Douglas councillor Devon Watson, who was himself in self-isolation on the day of the election, hit out at the inability to register for a last-minute proxy ballot in a local authority vote.
I think one of the reasons this was allowed to happen is A, the sort of people who are disenfranchised, and B, the fact that people don't think local politics matters quite a lot. And obviously what this does is this further reinforces that notion, so it creates a sort of negative cycle.
Will you be filing legal papers?
And we certainly have grounds to. I think we've got 24 hours, so the deadline is pretty soon. But I think the grounds for a legal challenge are strong, and it's certainly something that we're looking at the moment.
So why wasn't this issue dealt with in advance? And could we see a similar problem at the general election? Those are issues I put to Infrastructure Minister Tim Baker the day after the local authority elections.
You've got to look at where we are. The scale of the COVID pandemic on the Isle of Man now is completely different from where it's been at any time in that last 18-month period. I mean, I heard Andrew Bentley say it was entirely foreseeable, and I'd say, well, what did he do about it at that point in time? Why weren't...
It was mentioned in Douglas Council.
Yeah, it may be mentioned in Douglas Council, but, you know, many things are mentioned by many, many people. It's actually about saying, OK, we want something different doing about this. There were concerns, there were comments raised about the election... but those were primarily about the election that was due to take place in April 2021. So that was the second version. So the being mentioned in Douglas Council, I understand, was primarily around that. We've got difficult choices to make. It's very easy sitting on the outside and just saying, we'll just sort that out without any understanding of the ramifications of it. You know, we can pass laws, we can say this is what the rules are going to be. Actually, the elections are delivered by the local authorities and the returning officers, you know, so they've got to actually be comfortable with what they've been asked to do and feel that it's appropriate and reasonable.
2 months today, it will be the general election. Can you promise now that this will not be an issue then?
Yes, because we've got the new framework, the new electoral framework is in place. My understanding is up to 24 hours before the absent voter arrangements can be triggered. There's the use of postal votes and proxy votes. The real question is, could and should it have been implemented for this election that we've just had rather than doing it in the Keys general election? The decision was, from a broader perspective, that at the time, that the Keys election was the one to effectively use as the first outworking of this. And with hindsight, you might have changed that, but everything's easy with hindsight, Sean.
The local authority election wasn't the only election in July, as Tynwald gathered to pick its new president. Steve Roden stepped away from the role after 5 years overseeing the Manx Parliament's proceedings. Two men threw their hats into the ring, Enterprise Minister Lawrence Skelly and Speaker of the House of Keys, Ewan Watterson, with Mr Skelly defeating his Russian colleague in the vote. Meanwhile, controversy was brewing in St Mark's in the summer as protesters campaigned against planners' decision to allow the felling of a number of elm trees to allow changes to access for a local resident. A petition against the decision attracted huge interest both on and off the island, with TV wildlife expert Chris Packham among those calling for the trees to be spared. Geoffrey Boot, who was the Environment Minister at the time, stepped in to hold talks with the landowner, and eventually a solution was found.
Had the opportunity to appeal been taken, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in at the moment. But putting that to one side, I think we now have an excellent result. It's one that I'm very pleased with, and I think the owners are relieved that we have been able to hopefully engineer a solution in terms of road safety from their perspective and the environment from our perspective, and obviously the protesters and observers who passed comment on this.
There was lots for sports fans to cheer in July as Mark Cavendish rolled back the years and returned to top form in the Tour de France. The Manx Missile won 4 stages to see himself comfortably in the lead of the green jersey competition, as well as matching Eddie Merckx's record for the most stage wins in the history of the competition. There was much anticipation going into the final stage that Cavendish might break that record outright, with a big screen erected in the Villa Gardens for the occasion. While it wasn't to be, he did enough to ensure he wrapped up the sprint title for the second time in his career, 10 years after his first green jersey. A season later than originally planned, FC Isle of Man kicked off their league campaign, travelling to Main Road FC for the Manx club's first league fixture in the English football pyramid. It was a 1-1 draw for the Ravens, and manager Chris Bass spoke to Manx Radio afterwards.
Today was a big occasion, and it looked like it showed on the players that it was, you know, a big occasion. But we did learn a lot from our players today, and there's a lot of things that we can improve on.
Some of the most famous Manx men were honoured in the summer as the long-anticipated Bee Gees statue was unveiled on Douglas Promenade. These locals reacted to the arrival of the Gibb brothers.
I think it's fantastic. We just noticed it from over there. We thought we'd come over and have a quick look. I think it's a great idea. I absolutely love it. The Bee Gees, yeah. It's anything that helps the Isle of Man look great, like, you know, brilliant. I love it.
And what do you make of the likeness?
Oh, it's definitely them, isn't it? Without a shadow of a doubt, like, oh, yeah, it's the brothers. Oh, yeah.
Personally, I'd like to have seen the island done more with it, you know, for, like, the cruise visitors and people. The money might have been better spent on a convention centre or a museum or something to do with, like, Sir William Hillary, Archibald Knox, the Bee Gees, people, you know, who were Manx, and there's a certain following in the world, and that might have attracted different visitors, you know.
Someone's made a great job of it, very lifelike, you know. But my wife's actually seen them.
Are you guys from Douglas?
No, we're from Chelmsford in Essex. We're just over here for a few days.
You've seen the Bee Gees, so tell me, is that a decent likeness?
I was a long way away from them, as it was Wembley Stadium, so. But yes, very, I would think so.
Speaking of the prom, at the start of 2021, the work on Douglas Promenade was expected to be finished by March. In March, we heard that date had been pushed back to August, and in July came the news that the work had been delayed by a further month. Tim Baker explained why.
They're very reliant on subcontractors. Those subcontractors can either come from the island or they can come from elsewhere. The ones that are on the island are inundated with other more profitable work at the moment, so they would rather go and do that. And Aldin is struggling to gather resource from the UK. It has done very, very well in bringing some very hard working Romanian subcontractors over who are absolutely doing a superb job. But there's a limit to what they can do. So we're being pragmatic and saying, how do we collectively get this resolved? And the department can deploy resources that would have been doing other things, and Aldin will have to pay for that.
The end of September came and went, with construction still very much continuing on the promenade. Minutes published by the MyProm Strategic Board showed the project would be pushed back until November, and then new Infrastructure Minister Tim Crookall had this update for the House of Keys.
We haven't got a date exactly when the points are going to be back. We don't know when. It's going to take 3 to 4 weeks to relay those rails. And then, of course, there's the weather over the winter period, and we might have COVID to contend with. It's absolutely impossible to put a completion date. I would absolutely love to put a completion date on this so everybody would know and say, Happy Christmas, it's finished. It's not possible to do that at this time.
Perhaps our 2022 news review of the year will feature the completion of Douglas Prom. Watch this space. It's Manx Radio's news review of the year, a roundup of the headlines that we've been talking about in 2021. The month before an election can be quiet, with politicians limited in what they can say because of pre-election rules. But the Public Accounts Committee dropped a bombshell on the final day before the House of Keys was dissolved, publishing evidence given by the Department of Health and Social Care's medical director, Dr. Rosalind Ranson. The evidence had been heard in secret earlier in the year, with fears that holding the session in public could prejudice ongoing legal proceedings. But the committee believed her evidence should be in the public domain, releasing a lengthy transcript detailing Dr. Ranson's involvement in the island's response to coronavirus, including the decision to close the borders, something she said should have happened sooner, as Manx Radio's Tessa Hawley reports.
According to Dr. Ranson, clinicians were told only to test people who had a positive travel history to countries with outbreaks and who were symptomatic. This was despite patients being admitted to Nobles Hospital in February who had symptoms that clinicians were concerned could be COVID. She says the Manx approach to follow the English body caused unease and claims it was consistently difficult to question the advice and guidance given by the Director of Public Health. Dr. Ranson said Dr. Henrietta Hewitt accused medical staff of developing inappropriate behaviours, adding it was not appropriate to be requesting testing when the patient didn't meet the criteria. In response to Dr. Ranson's claims, the DHSC says it's concerned much of the information presented is inaccurate, has no evidence base, and/or is unprofessional in terms of respecting colleagues and command and decision-making structures.
In September, the island said goodbye to Lieutenant Governor Sir Richard Gosney as new representative for the Queen, Sir John Lorimer, arrived. Following restoration works at Castle Rushen, he was sworn in the ancient capital for a 5-year term. It's still early days in Sir John's tenure, but he's already throwing himself in at the deep end, having committed to taking part in tomorrow's New Year's Day dip in Douglas. 99 days ago today, the island was going to the polls to elect a new House of Keys. It was a historic night for Manx politics, with 4 members of the previous Council of Ministers failing to be re-elected, and 10 women voted in, making the current House the most gender-balanced ever. Manx Radio was at every count on the night to hear from those who were successful and to say farewell to those who weren't.
It's just such a momentous moment that 2 females have got into, as you know, in a constituency as MHKs. It's the first time in history. It's absolutely phenomenal.
I'm honoured and privileged that the people of Douglas North have put their trust in me for a second time, and that just under 80% of those who came out to vote today cast a ballot for me.
Well, I'm standing for common sense, and I'm standing for accountability. Those are the 2 things that I'm promising to the people of Middle and to the wider Isle of Man over the next 12 months.
I am disappointed with the outcome, but I've got to accept that the public has spoken, and I feel as I've stepped forward. It's always been about serving the people of the Isle of Man. I've served them to the best of my ability for the last 5 years, and to be honest, I've achieved in one term what I thought I could probably achieve in two terms. So from that point of view, there's no unfinished business from my point of view.
I think it's proven today, you know, from the number of votes that both of us got on the ballot papers today, that the people of Onchan recognise that we've both done a good job for Onchan, and I'll continue, and, you know, congratulations to Rob, and we will continue to work for the best interests of the people of Onchan.
There is no greater honour than to be a member of the House of Keys and represent people to have their best interests at heart, and to have them put their faith in you not once but now four times, and I'm greatly honoured.
Is this the end of your political career now?
Yeah, probably. you know, I love being part of the community, and that's what I want.
You're obviously upset, but thanks, Ray. Thank you.
The next government will have to hit the ground running as much as it possibly can, but it's vital that we put together a proper plan for this island. But amongst all the challenges, there are so many opportunities for this island, opportunities for a greener, cleaner future, opportunities for economic diversification, opportunities for better health care, and opportunities across the board for us to deliver a better future for our people on this island. I'm deeply humbled by the result today. Thank you very, very much.
Attention quickly turned to who would take charge of the House, with just a couple of weeks before the newly elected 24 had to pick a chief minister, just who would throw their hat into the ring. Education Minister Dr. Alex Allinson had confirmed he'd be interested in the run-up to the election, but the man who many saw as the front-runner, Treasury Minister Alfred Cannon, had not confirmed his intentions before September's vote. After nominations closed, it was a head-to-head between the duo. Both had their supporters, but ultimately just one could take the job.
Mr. Cannon has received 14 votes, Dr. Allinson has received 8 votes. So the motion is that Mr. Cannon be appointed the Keys nominee for Chief Minister. That's the motion that will be before you, so please vote. 21 votes for, 3 against. I therefore announce that Mr. Cannon is in fact the Keys nominee, and I wish him all the best and congratulations on the post. Mr. Cannon, would you like to say a few words at this point?
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Speaker, and can I thank my proposer and seconder for their extremely kind remarks, for which I'm extremely grateful, and I'm also extremely grateful to the many honourable members who've taken the time to speak to me over the past week or so and express their views both on what they were seeking from a chief minister but also their views about how they thought government should be shaped in the future. And indeed, I look forward to working with all honourable members in the coming days to firm up our plans. Can I also thank Dr. Allinson for the professional manner and considerations he's given during the short campaign around this important election, and I wish him well for the future.
The new administration faced a difficult decision in its first full Tynwald sitting, put the island's gas prices up by a significant amount, or face the prospect of the island's only gas supplier running out of funds. That was the conundrum put forward when global gas prices rocketed in the autumn, with Manx Gas saying it would need to increase bills by 27.5%. Newly appointed Treasury Minister David Ashford announced plans for financial support for those on low incomes, and the price rise was ultimately given the go-ahead. But it wasn't without criticism from some members. Douglas South member Claire Christian.
They now seek to simply recover their mistakes by charging their customers more. Now is the time for the parent company shareholders to step up and return some of these excess profits.
So what does the new government want to achieve? That was the question Alf Cannon hoped would be answered by the Island Plan. The document was published in November, setting out the Cannon administration's priorities, as Cabinet Office Minister Kate Lord-Brennan explained.
I, like many other politicians, were hearing on the doorstep that they wanted improvements and change in their day-to-day lives when they stepped out the door, so that the driver to recover from things that have taken a toll on the island, you know, is not just going to be something that only the Isle of Man wants to address, but, you know, it is something that we need to pursue. We want a better island for the future, and we need to galvanise, you know, really the whole island behind that, not only government, but any other you know, groups, organisations, stakeholders that can work together to do this.
The 24-page document is just the first draft. We should see the finished product in January's Tynwald in a few weeks' time. September's election saw Jane Paul Wilson and Kate Lord Brennan voted into the House of Keys, having both been serving members of the Legislative Council. It meant Tynwald's upper chamber found itself two members short. Seven candidates came forward to replace the duo, and it was statistician Paul Crane and former Chief of Staff to the Lieutenant Governor, Diane Kelsey, who were chosen. The COP26 climate summit in Glasgow dominated international headlines, with world leaders gathering in Scotland to discuss ways to cut carbon emissions and limit global warming. The Isle of Man's delegation was led by GARF MHK Daphne Kane, who'd been appointed chair of the Climate Transformation Board a few weeks earlier.
We're going to set our own ambitious target, and actually that means that will require us to consult with the public, and we really need to bring everybody along with us on this to be able to achieve that for the whole nation.
Some are saying 2050 is too far away, it's too late.
Well, we've got a long way to go. We've probably made less progress in certain areas than people wanted to see. The other meeting we had this afternoon was really encouraging. Met with Ørsted and discussed the possibility of a wind farm that would maybe in sort of 7 to 10 years, not immediately, but something that would categorically enable us to generate some of our electricity through renewable systems. So the possibilities are there, the interest is there, and we have to consider everything, and we need to get the mix right for the benefit of the island and to take our place in the world, to be doing our bit to reduce emissions and keeping that temperature increase globally to 1.5 degrees.
Spending on infrastructure was making the headlines again as we headed into the final month of the year, with an extra £32.6 million being sought for the Liverpool landing stage. The project had initially been expected to cost less than £30 million, but the budget is now more than £70 million, something current Infrastructure Minister Tim Cruckle says is too high. But he says the cost of not having a Liverpool link would be even higher.
So as everybody said this afternoon, or nearly everybody said, spoke, you know, lessons need to be learned and where do we go from here? So, yeah, absolutely, got to happen.
I suppose the question people out there will be asking is that the end of it, £70 million? Is there any more waiting for us?
We hope not. Let's hope that's the end of it.
It's only hope at the moment. There's no sort of categoric line drawn in the sand.
There's no categoric line. I mean, as we've seen with COVID, I mean, somebody queried this afternoon the expense on COVID, and that's still around. And if, God forbid, if that comes back in a big way, that could slow things up again. I really hope so. I really hope that's it.
You know, but it could go further. We could be asking for more.
I don't want to. I really don't want to, but you know, you've heard today what could happen. So, as far as we know, that's everything on the table now. As far as we know.
And is it worth it?
Long term, I think so. As I said in there this afternoon, though, if we'd have known that at the beginning, I'm sure Tynwald wouldn't have started this project. £70 million is huge. It's far too big, and you know, PAC will come back with the questions, and you know, they've got to be answered. What went wrong? Where did it go wrong? And we'll find out.
Well, just as attention started to turn towards Christmas and the end of 2021, there was one more surprise in store.
Omicron variant.
Omicron.
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 The so-called Omicron variant.
The new variant of COVID-19, thought to be even more transmissible, was inevitably heading to the island. The development meant Alfred Cannon delivered his first coronavirus media briefing. Just over a week later came the news that the variant had likely reached Manx shores.
Two possible cases of the Omicron variant of COVID-19 have been detected in the Isle of Man. They've been identified at the Nobles Hospital Laboratory from PCR tests taken from two individuals with recent travel history.
We have to learn to keep calm and gather all the facts and data before we make any changed decisions. You know, we cannot eliminate the virus. We cannot eliminate variants of concern. At the present time, we can only protect with the vaccine and mitigate to slow down spread. And any enhanced actions that we do take has consequences. I will update councillor ministers on Monday as to the situation, and we will determine whether we need to take any further action.
It meant an increased push to get booster vaccines rolled out before Christmas, with thousands attending drop-in clinics at Chester Street in the week before Christmas. Meanwhile, a new testing regime was announced. You no longer need a PCR test if you have coronavirus. A positive lateral flow is now enough. Alf Cannon explained the reason for the change.
This change is designed to harness the testing capability across our community and capitalise on the reliability and availability of home testing kits. It is vital that asymptomatic cases are picked up, and I urge everyone to keep a good stock of lateral flow devices to ensure that you, your family and those around you are testing regularly. I am asking you all to self-manage your health, self-manage your families, and help us by reporting in the actions that you are taking. We are now asking and empowering every member of our society to help keep the island moving. Those close contacts currently adhering to rules specific to the Omicron variant will be contacted by 111 and released from self-isolation and asked to undertake a lateral flow test prior to leaving. Contact tracing will be based on self-declarations in most cases, and we will ask those who log a positive test to get in touch with people who may need to take extra precautions.
So just what will you remember most about life on the Isle of Man in 2021? The lockdowns? The borders reopening? The election? Or perhaps just simply taking a selfie with the Bee Gees statue? Who knows what stories we'll be talking about this time next year, but as we say goodbye to 2021, all that's left is to wish you a very happy new year from all in the Manx Radio newsroom. If you would like to listen again to the news review of the year, it'll soon be available as a podcast at manxradio.com. See you all in 2022.